You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, June 22nd, 2015. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live, steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal.
In the heartland of America, Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Arun Squire on why conservatives won't call Charleston what it was, a race-based terrorist attack on African Americans. We're also going to talk about the broader discourse of modern white supremacy in America and how it feeds into modern Republican politics. And speaking of feeding into modern Republican politics, that site where the killer, Dylann Roof, got his quote-unquote facts from about black people and crime and white people and our civilization being under threat, quote unquote. Well, it turns out it came from a website that is presided over by a notorious racist, which is no surprise, and a major Republican donor. Also, I would add, is no surprise. We'll get into that. Also, in the Middle East, Tony Blair holding secret talks with Hamas's political leader. Explain what that means, why it probably won't work. What else do we got, Matt?
Obama's on Marin!
Obama was on Marin.
Like my Marc Maron impression?
I like your Marc Maron impression. It's one mode. You know, on his podcast, he tries to sound a little more mellow a lot. But it nails, that's like the Maron for the promos for a sitcom, 100%. And,
The promos for a sitcom. Give me a drink of water! That hits the spot.
I've never seen his sitcom. So we got a lot about that. A bunch more. Obviously, we're running late, folks. But really quick, we're going to call Arun in a second. But I just wanted to get to this because it's pretty awesome. So over the weekend, Bernie, Senator Sanders, continuing this just really incredible insurgency that is so powerful and so robust that even the mainstream media is forced to take notice. He took the show to Denver, major swing state, Colorado, major city Denver, had crowds that completely surpassed capacity, which is what he's getting when he goes all over the country. He gave a great speech. And what I love, and this is according to a write-up on Sanders' own website, I will say up front. But Bernie said before he went out to this crowd in Denver at the Hamilton Gymnasium at the University of Denver, "This is an extraordinary turnout," Bernie said as he surveyed the crowd. And then he ran up on stage as Neil Young's "Rockin' in the Free World" played with approval. And of course, what's great is that Donald Trump, who, as entertaining as he is and as much of a jackass as he is, and I agree with Sam, he will play a much more important role than people realize in the Republican primary. You got to say, after the events of this week, it really does put it into pretty stark, you know, just how much of a friggin' joke and how demented and absurd this guy is. But he went out to for his campaign announcement, and he came out to Neil Young's "Rockin' in the Free World," which is hilarious because it's an indictment of Reaganomics. And Neil Young said, "Don't use my song." But not only should you, Donald Trump, not be using my song, Bernie Sanders should, because that's who I support. I love that. That everything about that story, from the turnout to the song to Neil Young, that's a really an everything is right in the world moment. We'll be right back with Arun Squire. This is an Eminem Monday on The Majority Report.
Every man got a right to decide his own destiny. And in this judgment, there is no partiality. So arm in arms, with arms, we'll fight this little struggle. Children, that's the only way we can overcome a little trouble. And brother, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right. Trouble, yes, 'cause soon we'll find out who is the real revolutionaries. And I don't want my people to be contrary. And brothers, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right.
Welcome back to The Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks, and right there, I think very apropos of at least something that I've liked to listen to this past week in light of these events a little bit, was Bob Marley performing Zimbabwe at the Independence, formal sort of turnover of white rule in Rhodesia and the creation of the modern state of Zimbabwe, which has obviously had its own problems. But in light of recent events, it's good to listen to that song. And joining us now is Arun Squire. He's a journalist and a playwright. His writing has appeared in Talking Points Memo, The New Republic, and many other publications. Arun, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me, Michael. Great to be here.
It's very, very good to have you. And I should just tell everybody, in keeping with some, I know Mark Ames last week was in a park. So keeping with our sort of acoustic on-the-ground reporting, Orin is on the street because of a subway delay, which anybody who lives in New York City or has spent time here can understand. But Orin, you wrote a piece last week after the terrorist attacks in Charleston where you talked about basically why conservatives won't admit that Charleston was a race crime. We're going to go broaden this conversation, but what I really like is how you began this piece by talking about the generic words that are used to describe these types of crimes, like senseless, like unimaginable, like horrific. Obviously, on some basic level, any form of violence like this, no matter what it is horrific and unimaginable. But if we're looking at what the motivations of what this guy obviously were and where this crime took place and who it targeted, there's really nothing senseless about it.
Oh, yeah, it was very purposeful, and it makes complete sense not only within his mental well-being and psychological understanding of the world, but also what he's being told by a large percentage of people in this country.
Right.
And by conservative media, Fox News, and majority of conservative talk radio. Everything he did makes complete sense. And it's the inevitable end of a culture of violence, divisiveness, and white privilege and white fragility. It is this insane dynamic where people who have the most think they have the least. And the people who are the most violent think they're the victims. And it's consistently repeated itself for hundreds and hundreds of years. And every generation comes along and thinks they're different. Mm. Sure, it was racist in the 60s, but we're different, even though black people are saying the same thing. Even though Latino people are saying the same thing, somehow it's different now. They must be lying or not telling the truth.
Right.
It's very bizarre how each generation is able to completely disconnect from history, disconnect from any awareness, and disconnect from other people's humanity who are saying point blank, we are being abused by our police, we're being treated unfairly in every single aspect of life, we're not represented in the media, our voices are not heard, and we're being shot and killed and brutalized. And to say, nah, it can't be that bad, you're just exaggerating. Because I'm the one who's the real victim because I have to listen to this.
And that's
what we see with people like Dylan.
Right. And And one of the things that I think is so important about your piece is that you're basically you're identifying a continuum. So let's go through it point by point, because obviously not everybody that holds these, even any semblance of these beliefs, and some people in fact who even do hold these beliefs, don't take action like this. Then there's the sort of enablers of these beliefs, like you're talking about Fox News, talk radio. And then when I think about a phrase like white fragility, which I want you to elaborate on, strikes me that you're pointing to, you're kind of identifying people that have these attitudes, people that implicitly have these attitudes, and then people who might not necessarily even consciously have certain attitudes, but because of how they relate to race and they relate to these conversations, they're enabling them too. Is that what you mean, like by white fragility? Like, what could you elaborate that for us?
White fragility is a term sociologist Robin DiAngelo came up with several years ago. She's a middle-aged white woman who is having to do equal opportunity training and about discrimination in Washington State, and she noticed that these workers had these wildly irrational, unsubstantiated fears, and then that resulted in anger and lashing out towards people, often who weren't in the room. And she would say that she would often be doing these diversity training workshops, and older white men and women would get furiously angry at her and pound and bang the table about white people falling behind in this country and not getting a job. And she would be in a room with only white people. It would be an entire room of white people, and a few people would be angry about how white people can't get a job and, like, not even being able to see what's in front of them. And so white fragility was a term she came up with that was people who are emotionally and psychologically extremely fragile and delusional and believing that they're the victims and then reacting in a very violent way towards others who are actually not attacking them. And it's part of, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy. I don't know if they say ABCs. The ABCs of cognitive behavioral therapy are activating incident, belief system, and the consequence. So if you have a really irrational belief system, no matter what the activating incident is, whether it's Ferguson, Trayvon Martin, or Charleston, your belief system will be like, oh, well, Trayvon Martin shouldn't have been wearing a hoodie.
Right.
Oh, well, Ferguson, he was a thug. Oh, well, Charleston, it was Christian oppression. Because your belief system will not let you consider that because it is so entrenched in persecutorial anxiety that it's not based in any reality. And as a consequence of that, the C of the ABCs, you perpetuate the system and make it worse.
Right.
And you're in this endless spiral. Every activating incident just reconfirms an irrational belief system and then helps trigger another series of irrational systems and consequences from that. And it's a system that hurts everyone, and that's why it's something that doesn't work. And it's destructive because it hurts white people as much as black people.
Yeah, because it's a mental illness. I mean, I think that's another thing that you're getting at that's very important. But let's actually go to the church factor here, because it's very important, I think, for two reasons that I'd like you to elaborate on. You pointed out very, very well in this article, and actually we covered this last week on our program too, this sort of really disgusting attempt on that was very blatant on Fox and amongst presidential contenders to sort of push the notion that this might have something to do with a war on Christianity, or that this was a target, you know, that this, and And obviously that's just sort of shocking nonsense. And I have to admit, and maybe this is me certainly being naive, this is like some of those clips on Fox, and unfortunately for my job, I have to watch a lot of these clips. I was actually shocked. I mean, it sort of blew my mind on that level that they would actually push that narrative. So I want you to speak to that. But the other thing that I think is important to note here is that, you know, it's not just a church either. In Southern politics, in African-American politics, the church is a source of political power and resistance. So, of course, it actually was, in my view, it makes a lot of sense that it would be very specifically chosen and targeted. But as part of that white reaction, that white supremacist ideology, not having to do with Christianity, but having to do with the church as a PowerPoint of black politics.
Well, I think that it's very interesting that Fox News immediately had this narrative laid out, because it was very intentional. These people are not stupid, and they do not believe what they preach. They're just absolutely craven and completely manipulative in the things that they tell a very large, uneducated, fearful, aging population of people.
Right.
And in order to be that successful, you have to be completely aware of the ins and outs of your audience. So much like a lot of Republicans when it comes to gay rights issues, who kind of don't care at all, but are completely willing to use Christians to get out the vote for them, so they come out against gay rights. But in back rooms, they like laugh at Christians as being stupid. I think that a large percentage of these people at Fox News feel the same way. They are willing to promote this stereotype, and they're willing to promote this narrative, which isn't false. And then they laugh at these people, their own audience members, as being easily manipulated and duped by this narrative, which if you do even a perfunctory search of American history, would reveal itself as being untrue. And there's no excuse now, because everyone has internet on their phone, and you can look it up in 5 seconds and figure this out and piece it together. But because of the ABC's behavioral system, no matter what information presents itself, it does not penetrate. In fact, it gets worse. Same thing with climate change. The thing about climate change is irrefutable, but the resistance to it grows with the evidence.
Right.
Because of the ABC, the belief system is irrational, illogical, and destructive. And so the only way to beat that is by an actual, they say that ABC, there's a G, which is the dispute of it, the dispute of the belief system, and saying, is this actually true? And it has to come from people inside the belief system, so that you begin to change that dynamic where it's trigger, trigger, trigger to the next consequence, to the next Ferguson. People begin to think, wait a minute, maybe my belief system is wrong, because this is the 10th police shooting in a month, and all of these people are unarmed, and most of them are black males. Maybe my belief system can be changed. And I've seen it happen. Mm. On rare occasions, it's a lot more difficult than fear-based politics, which is very easy to get people to react to. But it is possible to get people to switch out of that easy ABC, that habit that they formed in their mind. But you have to turn off Fox News. You have to pick up a book. You have to actually do some Google searches and think for yourself and do some critical thinking skills that most people, unfortunately, don't have. No matter what the age, it can be learned and it can be acquired and it can be strengthened. So I do hold out hope that more and more people will turn off hateful talk radio, will turn off this manipulative, editorialized news, and actually think for themselves, not based on emotion, not based on fear, but actually do some critical thinking alone, and then backing that up with research and supporting that information.
So If then, what is the sort of broader answer or strategy? Because I think it's very interesting to have the perspective, and I think it makes a lot of sense that in many ways we're really talking about sort of a cultural mental illness, basically. And there might be the sort of individual dispute and shift, but on a sort of large level communicating about this and working on these issues, what is the path? if we kind of know that, as you're saying, it's fundamentally an irrational conversation. It's fundamentally an erroneous belief system.
You need a deprogramming of sorts. You need a cultural, sociological deprogramming. And in order to do that, you first have to become conscious that you've been programmed in a certain way, which is why the conversation is important about race, but certainly not the end of it, because then you actually need to do something.
Right.
So the more and more we talk about it, the more and more we have to get at people's belief system. So I would prefer not to attack irrational people or Fox News. I would prefer to ask them to expound upon their initial thoughts and just let them actually reel out all the rope before they hang themselves. Reel out all the irrational things rather than just immediately jump on them. Because when liberals jump on them, then they just shut up and go back into their cave.
Right.
We have to let them carry this illogical argument to its dead end and then make them see that and keep doing that. And that requires a lot of patience. That requires very careful, guided awareness of where this is leading and where it's coming from in a knowing of our history. I've had many, many friends growing up because I went to sort of very rich, privileged schools who had these default views. And we would just have these conversations. And fortunately, I was so steeped in history because of my parents, I didn't have to jump and get angry at them. I would just keep asking them questions. So you say black people have no history. What do you mean by history? Well, they haven't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so who wrote these books that history comes from? And we would have these long debates, which sometimes would take months around a lunch table each day during school. And we'd be like, so what do you mean by all Arab people are terrorists? And they'd be like, well, they're just blowing them. So all Arab people? You just keep asking them these questions and getting them to consider the consequences of their words and the actual belief system behind that, if it makes any sense. All Arab people are terrorists? The Mexicans are coming to take all American jobs. Black people have no history. Like, you keep repeating that and getting to expand upon that so that they get beneath the surface bigotry. Because it's so easy to just exist on the level of surface bigotry and not examine it. And that's where most people live and exist, whether it's racial bigotry, whether it's misogyny, whether it's homophobia. It's just on the surface because it's unexplored. Because if you actually explore it, it's illogical. It doesn't work as a system. It doesn't work for anyone.
Right, absolutely. So as we sort of move towards the end of this conversation, I guess what I'm also interested in then, based off of what you're saying, which is that there is this element of really just having a certain type of directed conversation and having space for that. You're also a playwright. You're also somebody who's involved, obviously, in creating artistic products. What role do you think, you know, it seems to me in conversations that I've had, and I think to some degree in my own experience, that comedy, that art, that different ways of sort of getting a perspective have been really, really powerful. And it's kind of a cliche, but it does seem like that's just a sort of endless source. And you hear that sometimes with people. It's like very, you know, it's like very sincere. I didn't really get that. And then I read that book or I watched that film or I was involved in that sporting event for that matter. And something shifted. So is that like another site that we really have to be focused on in terms of kind of like opening up the conversations you're talking about?
I think art is very important. I think art is very important with creating empathy.
Right.
In causing people to disconnect or deprogram that ABC reaction or that habit. Because art gets us to sit in a room with people or by ourselves and actually see the world through another person's eyes, the protagonist and the antagonist. And sometimes the antagonist is just as important as causing a change in belief system as the hero's journey.
Right.
And I've seen it firsthand where I've had a play put up and people have begun to change. You don't really see the change in a moment, but you can see the cracks in the facade begin to appear. I remember in November, the day before Thanksgiving on a Wednesday, going to a play at La Mama in the East Village. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, there was a wine and cheese reception, and I had nothing to do, so I just hung around, you know, the day before Thanksgiving. And this older white woman came up to me, and she started talking, because nobody wanted to talk to her. I didn't realize until much later the reason why. And so we're just talking, and she goes, well, you probably don't want to talk to me. And I go, why? because I'm a Republican. And I go, okay, well, we're still talking. And she begins to explain her views about, her words, we're losing all our jobs from Mexicans. ISIS is coming here to kill us. Ebola, why hasn't anyone done a play about Ebola? Since
she even did the Ebola thing. America? Huh? Wow.
She was in it, and I would just sit there. I didn't attack her. I just said, like, yeah, you really believe Ebola's coming to kill, is going to kill all of us? And she would say, yeah. And then I just move it on, keep it moving. And I was like, you really believe Mexicans are taking all of our jobs? Yeah. And by the end of this very long conversation, that actually ended up being 2 hours longer than the play itself, I could begin to see the cracks. She was like, well, you're not going to get me to change my view of Native Americans, which means she was already beginning to change her view about other things. And she was jokingly saying, well, you're not going to get me to wear moccasins and things of that nature. And I'm like, I'm not trying to get you to wear moccasins. I'm just getting you to recognize that, you know, a few key things. And at the end, I said, please turn off the television.
Right.
And she kind of grudgingly said, well, maybe. I was like, just turn it off. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm just asking you questions, and I'm asking you to consider, turn off that TV, because I have a feeling I know what you're watching by the series of things. And she just walked away, and you could begin to see the cracks in the stitcher. Now, if the beginning of this two-hour conversation, if she would have said, oh, you're not going to like me because I'm a Republican, and then I would have said, you're right, and walked away.
Right.
Then none of this would have happened. Now, when this actual change drops for her, who knows, it may never happen. But maybe she'll be a little less malignantly narcissist and unaware and spouting these ignorant viewpoints. Maybe she will go home and look up something on Google. Maybe she'll hear Rush Limbaugh for the 100th time say something that's just the same hate-filled diatribe, and she'll turn down the radio or she'll turn it off. Mm. And she'll sit there in silence and think. Unfortunately, it's very easy to program people in hate, but to deprogram them with love, unfortunately, has to happen on an individual basis. It usually takes person by person. And that's why hate is so powerful, because you can sit 100 people in a room, get them to hate an enemy, and then send them out in the world to kill them. But deprogramming Nazis and KKK members and skinheads, it has to happen with love, and it takes more time, and it has to happen on a one-on-one basis most of the time.
Well, Orrin Squire, I really appreciate you joining us today. You have links to your pieces on the Majority Report website, majority.fm, and I think that, especially even in the context of this show, where we talk about the political questions and the systems, that sort of piece of an individual conversation and how you actually shift these poisonous beliefs and views is really helpful, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Michael. I just want to say I don't know much about your audience, but I'm assuming you're pretty much preaching to the choir like most people do, which is fine.
Yeah.
But to the audience members that are out there,
a lot of moccasin wearers.
If you hear this, a lot of moccasin wearers, a lot of people eat vegan and organic and go to Whole Foods. But if you're out there and you're aware of this, and you have an uncle or an aunt or a friend who has these views, which are clearly not based in fact, illogical, and based in dividing people against each other, and are based in fear and hatred, to ask them questions, to not attack them, and then to get them to consider another belief system. Because their belief system only causes them pain, and they, on some subconscious level, they're aware of that. But to get them to consider examining their belief system, and then stepping back and allowing grace, love, God, whatever you believe in, to sort of flow in that empty space of silence and reflection. We have enough attack. I can sit here and attack conservatives all day and Republicans all day. And my attack.
We will probably be doing that when the interview is done.
Yeah. But just consider something else.
Yes. No, I think it's a very important perspective. And actually, on this show, we do definitely have people listening and watching who have very different perspectives. And there is a choir, and then there is actually a significant non-choir segment as well. But again, Orrin, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Be well. All right, folks, what should we do here? I think we have time to do a story or two, and then we'll go into the fun.
So let's go into Dylann Roof, the Charleston shooter terrorist, the right-wing white supremacist racist. Let's get all these words in there because they're all perfectly describing Dylann Roof. Let's get into his manifesto, which was discovered over the weekend literally by two people on Twitter, Henry Krinkle, at Henry Krinkle and at E.M. Quangle. They found Dylann Roof's manifesto. And before we get into that, let me go into a little bit, because there are actually some conspiracies out there that this was a hoax manifesto. It's not really his. Because two anonymous Twitter users found it, and God forbid, we all know that there's not real people behind these two users who found factual, true, real information. So let's get into how they found it and how it is impossible it's fake, really quickly. They found his information, his website, on domaintools.com. Domaintools.com is a business, a website run by a company. It was founded in 2002. And since 2002, its job has been to basically provide information on domain names, such as the Whois information, which is basically when you register a domain name, whatever.com, you put in your information. This domain's registered to your name, your address, your phone number, your email. It also archives that information, so it has historical Whois data, so it can tell you who owned such and such domain before the current registrant registered that domain name, if the domain name wasn't registered for the first time. It also archives IP address data, DNS information, which basically, in the short, shows where the website is host, where the domain name has a website that hosts, where that host is located, et cetera, et cetera. It also does some stuff that archive.org does, which basically takes screenshots of a website throughout certain parts in that website's history. Try not to get too technical here. So basically what these two Twitter users did was, one of Domain Tools' products is they have historical Whois data. Apparently, Dylann Roof, before he went out on his mass shooting, and sometime in between that time and February, when he registered, February of 2015, when he registered the domain name lastrhodesian.com. I mean, if it could be any clearer, the white Southern guy wearing a jacket with a Rhodesian flag, a white supremacist South African country, was now known as Zimbabwe. You know, not many people wearing that emblem on their jacket nowadays.
No, the apartheid South Africa flag and the Rhodesia flag.
Yeah, so this guy wearing those emblems on his jacket and all the photos he posted himself online. Okay, maybe lastrhodesian.com isn't enough to connect that website to Dylann Roof. But from the historical Whois data, it shows that early on in the domain name's history, in February, Dylann Roof, before turning the Whois information private, which you can do for a fee through domain registries, it had his personal information, Dylann Roof, his name, and his mother's address. Now, that was cached, saved information as seen in February of 2015. It was unaltered. It's not possible for domain tools to alter it unless they did it themselves. They're a business. I doubt they did that. It's impossible for these two Twitter users to do it, because you yourself can go to domaintools.com, go to lastrhodesian.com, sign up for a free trial, a 7-day free trial with Domain Tools, because there's a paid service, type in lastrhodesian.com, and you will see that in February, it had his information there, unchanged as archived by Domain Tools. What these Twitter users did, because it was private now, and they couldn't go to lastrhodesian.com and find it, Domain Tools has another product where you can type in someone's name and for $49 get a list of all the domain names that were ever registered under that person's name. You can do that too, spend $49 and get that information. Lastrhodesian.com is connected to Dylann Roof. If it was a hoax in any way, someone back in February had to have known that Dylann Roof, with two N's, last name Roof, with his mother's, this Dylann Roof's mother's address, and registered LastRhodesian.com knowing this guy was going to do this back in February. And then write a very specific screed that fits the ideology behind someone who would perpetrate such horrific terrorist acts against an African-American Southern church down to a T and write those down. So no, this is not a hoax. This, for all intents and purposes, is Dylann Roof's website with the manifesto that Dylann Roof wrote. Now that's out of the way. I'm not going to go much into Dylann Roof's manifesto. If you want to read it, it's out there. I'm not going to read on this program some of the disgusting, horrible, terrible things that he said about Jewish people, Hispanics. Oh boy, the list goes on. And the group he had the most hatred for that takes up the bulk of his manifesto, black people. However, what I am going to read from his manifesto is the things that he wrote that you literally cannot separate from any sort of mainstream conservative thought. When I was reading this manifesto, it struck me how many different right-wing politicians, pundits, just the right-wing base on Twitter, their blogs, Facebook. There's no difference. This is no different than what your racist, who doesn't want to come out as a racist, but you know he is, so let me add an addendum there. Your Republican uncle, your right-wing dad, your conservative neighbor, a majority, if not all, of the 2016 Republican primary candidates, people sitting in Congress, what they think. Dylann Roof says, starts out his manifesto saying, "I was not raised in a racist home or environment. Living in the South, almost every white person has a small amount of racial awareness. Me and white friends would sometimes would watch things that would make us think that blacks were the real racists." How many times have you heard your conservative friends, your conservative family members say that when a black person mentions race, it is they who are the real racists? How many pundits have gone on TV crying out that the racial tension in this community is only because of people like Al Sharpton who go on TV and speak about the crimes, the murder at the hands of police officers, at the hands of white supremacists, of black people, and that people like Al Sharpton are the real racists for talking about the racial dynamic in these killings? The racial dynamic that caused these killings. Again, he goes on. Dylann Roof continues. "The event that truly awakened me was the Trayvon Martin case. I would not be surprised if many of your young Republican buddies were awakened by the Trayvon Martin case. Seeing his name, I eventually decided to look him up. I read the Wikipedia article, and right away I was unable to understand what the big deal was." How many times you heard that from conservatives and right-wing people? How is this case any different than anything else? Who cares? It was obvious that Zimmerman was right. How many people, right-wing, Republican, believe in their true heart of hearts George Zimmerman was doing the right thing? "More importantly, this prompted me to type in the words black on white crime into Google, and I have never been the same since that day." How many times do you hear on Fox News, Fox and Friends, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, "Why isn't anyone talking about the black on white crime or the black on black crime?" And here he is, Dylann Roof, his opening paragraphs. In fact, I think this is the opening paragraph. Sorry, the second paragraph we're on now. "The first website I came to was the Council of Conservative Citizens, which we'll have another video up. And if you're listening to the podcast, you just heard Michael talk about in detail the right-wing white supremacists behind this Council of Conservative Citizens group who have donated to a number of people in the Republican Party running for president in 2016. From this point, I researched deeper and found out what was happening in Europe. I saw that the same things were happening in England and France and in all the other Western European countries. Again, I found myself in disbelief. As an American, we are taught to accept living in the melting pot, and black and other minorities have just as much right to be here as we do, since we are all immigrants. But Europe is the homeland of white people, and in many ways, the situation is even worse there. How is this any different from what you hear from Islamophobes? How is this any different than you hear from Pamela Geller? That Dutch politician, what
Geert Wilders.
How is that any different than what you hear from them?
He was influenced by them too.
Right here, this paragraph, you can't tell the difference between Dylan Roof and Anders Breivik. He's the guy who killed over 60 teens in Oslo, Norway. In fact, I would say this is coming dangerously close to what some new atheists think. He continues, and again, this is Dylan Roof's manifesto. I wish with a passion that niggers were treated terribly throughout history by whites, that every white person had an ancestor who owned slaves, that segregation was an evil and oppressive institution and so on, because if it was all it true, it would make it so much easier for me to accept our current situation. But it isn't true. None of it is. We are told to accept what is happening to us because of ancestors' wrongdoing, but it is all based on historical lies, exaggerations, and myths. Every white person is treated as if they had a slave-owning ancestor, but I have read hundreds of slaves' narratives from my state, and almost all of them were positive. And in many of these narratives, the slaves told of how their masters didn't even allow whipping on his plantation. How is this any different from those Republicans, those right-wing thinkers, those pundits who go out there and say, you know what? Slavery wasn't that bad. In fact, black people had it better when they were slaves. They were given food. They were given shelter. How is that any different from that sort of thinking, that ideology? We've heard it before in the mainstream, not in some racist 21-year-old white supremacist kid's fringe manifesto. Because you know what? A lot of what he writes in here isn't so fringe. And he goes on to talk about segregation. Segregation was not a bad thing. And he talks about how it was actually a good thing because, you know, black people have lower IQs, so they need different sort of learning, and it protected the white people from stooping to their level. I mean, he's just really saying what's on the minds of all those people. We just had a teacher talk about that pool party in Texas in a screed saying how she's just telling the truth. Segregation wasn't so bad. We spoke about it on this show. A Texas teacher. And I'll guarantee you, if this random Texas teacher's Facebook post went viral, who do you think made it viral? Who do you think got it out there to begin with? And you think it's just this one teacher in the South? Again, he continues. In a modern history class, it is always emphasized that when talking about bad things whites have done in history, they were white. But when we learn about the numerous, almost countless wonderful things whites have done, it is never pointed out that these people were white. Yet when we learn about anything important done by a black person in history, it is always pointed out repeatedly that they were black. How is this any different than the thousands of people from your Twitter followers, your Facebook friends, your high school buddies, your college buddies, your family members, the pundits you see on Fox News, the people in Congress, the Republicans in Congress and conservatives in Congress, the libertarians in Congress, who go out there and say, what about White History Month every February? How is this any different? How is it any different than the things that we hear every day, week in and week out, in the mainstream? It's just not. And this is a white supremacist murdering terrorists manifesto. And while he name drops that organization, the Council of Conservative Citizens, you'd be stupid, plain and simple, to not think if he found this through this right-wing group, Council of Conservative Citizens, he certainly heard it and had it reinforced by people like Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, the people, his leaders in his House of Representatives, his Senate leaders, the people, the politicians who are out there right now defending the flying of the Confederate flag, which on his website, lastrhodesian.com, was a zip file filled of photos with Dylann Roof posing with the Confederate flag, including a photo of him burning the U.S. flag. This is the ideology. He's just not afraid to tell it how it is. He's not afraid to cloak it in code words.
Okay, so we'll go to the fun half right now. Folks, you can become a member of this program, and you should become a member of this program today. You got to do it.
It's so easy.
It's easy. It's simple. It's what allows the Majority Report to grow and thrive. It's that really distinct independent media that you rely on. It's Democracy Now! Meets Howard Stern. Where else are you going to get that?
Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Whether or not you agree with Michael's
whether or not you agree with my comparison or not, which is not totally inaccurate. Where else are you going to hear an interview with Bernie Sanders and Badass Bernie on the same program? Where else are you going to find that? I mean, come on. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't be silly. Join. JustCoffee.coop. Free shipping is permanent now, right?
From free Just shipping Coffee. Is 24/7, 365.
That's just what they do. And we got emails like, hey, guys, I don't even really need to be telling you this, but the coffee, the Majority Report blend, is awesome. It's great. You're talking about fair trade, organic coffee. You end up saving money because you don't go and buy a new cup every friggin' day. It's some overpriced whatever. You got your good, well-sourced, organic worker. It's a co-op. Forget treating the workers well in a co-op economy. The workers have a stake. It's much better than just being treated well. How about owning something? Let's do that up. How about we get a piece of this? Actually, I don't know if I want a piece of this business. I'm just kidding. But seriously, justcoffee.coop, that's the way to go.
Don't you want a write-off?
Yeah, I'll take a write-off. I'll take a write-off. Damn right. Yeah, we got to talk to Sam. Download the Majority Report app today. That's a no-brainer. Write us a review on iTunes and say that you like Matt and I better than Sam, or mention Sam's sort of lack of work habits. That always drives him up a wall. As long as you give us 5 stars, it doesn't matter. What else do we got? Oh, if you do use Amazon, you got to use our link. A little bit of good comes out of that transaction.
And you know how easy it is to use that link? You just go to majorityreportkickback.com.
And the
same as going to Amazon, except you see the same exact thing as if you did go to Amazon. But because you go to majorityreportkickback.com, Amazon sees you visited them through there, and we get a teeny tiny kickback that, hey, at least takes something away from
the Amazon. And literally the only difference it makes for you is that you do a little bit of good. So we are going to see you on the fun half, where we have many stories. The IMs are open. I'm going to be calling into the phones in a second. See you on the flip side. And for non-members, peace out.
She says no, 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 no. I give her my heart. She says no, 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 no. 'Cause you're only afraid to leave. Only a brother to. Says no, 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 no. Just a little dog, and she knows I love her so. If I ask her to walk with me, she shakes her head. Ask her to walk with me. Why can't she ever see me? Say no.